This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's access media station, Plains FM, and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Kia ora and welcome to Goals and Growth, coming to you on Plains FM 96.9 from the heart of Canterbury. Goals and Growth is all about achievement, setting that objective, the target, whether big or small, near term or well into the future, taking careful aim with planning and purpose, and then going out and doing those things you need to do to reach that goal. And probably adapting the plan along the way to life's surprises. And yes, the journey to the goal is often a journey to better, to growth, to learning about ourselves, about others, about the world. A month ago, I was lucky to interview Mordecai Ntkwazi, I hope that's pronounced correctly, originally from Malawi in Southern Africa and now very much a Kiwi. Mordecai had an audacious goal, a really challenging objective. He is back to tell us about that goal, what happened, and what he learned along the way. Welcome back, Mordecai.
Kia ora, Pete. Thank you for having me back.
It's a pleasure. You made it back.
I did. In the words of Sir Elton John, I'm still standing.
I'm not going to torture people with my singing. Okay, let's recap on just what you were attempting. Can you share with any listeners that might have forgotten or didn't listen up a month or so ago, what were you attempting?
So 2 weeks ago now, I think, I had set out and attempted to run 165 kilometers in one go.
You are nuts. You do know that. You're certified.
I have been told that a couple of times.
Sorry. Anyway, 165 kilometers. What, just around Hagley Park?
I don't wish it was around Hagley Park. No, this is in Rotorua, around the Tarawera area, which went around these amazing lakes and through iwi land in very beautiful part of the country.
And it was part of the Tarawera Ultra Marathon.
Yes.
For the softies, they could do 21 kilometers half marathon. For the not quite so soft, they could do 50 Ks. For the pretty hardcore, they could do 100 Ks. And then for the completely insane and wonderfully inspirational and super fit, I would imagine, they could do what you did or what you attempted to do, which is 165 Ks.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness me. Okay. So tell me how the preparation went. Did it go as expected? I noticed the Godzone race on Friday isn't down because of COVID. So there weren't any issues with that, were there?
No, actually, we were quite fortunate that the change back to level 3 in Auckland and level 2 to the South Island, that happened just a day after. So the event was able to go ahead. The only challenge was international competitors. So I believe normally for Tarawera, 55% of participants are international. Mm. And this time, it was the first time since the beginning of the event in 2016, I believe, they had a completely local field. So that was quite amazing to see just people coming from all over the country. Yep. To take on this challenge, to share this challenge together.
Just before you got to the start line, were there any, I've forgotten this? Or
I was fortunate enough to have a very good support team, the best support team in the world, Kylie and Mel. They held me accountable because I had a certain level of naivety about the obstacle ahead. And it's always good to have to surround yourself with people who can support your goal and also be able to keep an eye out on the blind spots, which sometimes when you've got a big, audacious goal, you might not always be aware of. And those people around you are able to help you identify those and to help you to properly plan and to mitigate some of that, I'd say.
We're all about planning here. As goals and growth, yeah. I wouldn't expect that most people could wing 165 Ks in sort of one go. I wouldn't have expected that. So you're on the start line, no time for changes or any more training. You've got to go with what you have. How did you feel?
Fortunate for me, the event started at 4 a.m., so I was not yet awake enough to feel nervous. So it all felt very lucid, almost like a dream. We were treated to a very beautiful haka to send us off into the night with our head torches flashing, almost looking like fireflies into the night as we off. And it all just felt too surreal. It was a lot to take in all at once, and no time to feel nervous, just in awe.
So that was what was central in your thoughts, just this sense of occasion and awe and like, wow.
Yeah.
Nothing. So it was more outside of yourself than really inside, perhaps doubts or worries or concerns or something like that. That's a cool way of starting, isn't it?
Yeah, and like I said before, I'm not certain I was completely awake either. It was quite early.
So, is it a gun that started off, or was it a horn, or what actually started? Just curious.
That's a good question. Now, I actually do not actually remember.
Okay.
I think that's part of the just taking it all in, because for anyone who's never been to Rotorua before, it's a very, very beautiful place. And where we had started off was because a lot of the course goes through Iwi land.
Yeah.
And the day before, we had a beautiful porphyry at the marae, and that's actually where we had started on the actual day. And for me, it was such a huge honor to even just be in that space. And it just felt so surreal, and just this, I could feel there were not necessarily a weight, but the honor and the mana that I was in the presence of, and
like the respect.
It was honestly amazing.
I imagine it was mutual respect, you know, for the the people about you and the other athletes about to go off on this quest, almost, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you're off and running. What was your strategy for pacing yourself? Because you're a pretty quick runner. So I guess it would have been easy for you to go at a normal race pace and plan to keep up with the leaders, because they were probably, they were probably going at a pace, initially at least, you would have been quite comfortable to keep up with. So what was the strategy there?
The strategy for me, having never attempted anything quite like this, I adopted a conservative strategy, and I thought to myself, you're going to be out there for a long time. Make sure you conserve your energy, and also, like I mentioned earlier, you're in a very beautiful part of the country, very beautiful part of the world, actually, and don't let that moment or those moments pass you by focusing too much on how fast I'm going, and because it's going to be a long day. So initially, I must admit, at the start, I wasn't too sure, because you're surrounded by hundreds of people, and I'm thinking to myself, oh, am I going out too fast? Should I slow down? Or do we turn here? Do we go there? It's like, and having said that, we are in the dark for...
Follow the lights.
Exactly. The lights will guide you home. That's another Coldplay reference. And it took us a bit of time, but we sort of just started getting to rhythm by the time the sun was coming out, and sort of just going by feel, to be honest. Didn't have a set pace per se.
Mm-hmm. As you progressed, what seemed easier than expected and what was more surprisingly harder? So we'll go with the harder part at first. With the easier part.
Like I said earlier about the certain level of naivety that I had about the undertaking as a whole, was I didn't fully appreciate how challenging some of the course was going to be. And it wasn't necessarily to my detriment. It was actually somewhat of an advantage, because it was across the whole 165 kilometers, you've got 5,500 meters of elevation. But I thought, well, 165, that's going to be spread up over quite a long distance. How bad can it be?
That's 1.5 times the height of Aoraki Mount Cook, by the way. The whole vertical ascent. Anyway.
That was my first surprise. Was, wow, this is actually quite a lot of climbing.
Mm.
Right up until the end, literally the last... The hills were just coming up here and there, and I was thinking to myself, like, wow, I don't remember seeing this in the profile, that this hill was going to be this big and it's going to go on forever.
Yeah.
And also how far off walking tracks we'd go. So some of the course was through completely remote areas where there's no car access for maybe 40 kilometers and very non-runnable, very technical, rocky and rooty, and sections where you're actually literally ducking under fallen trees and climbing over things.
So we're not talking trail running here?
No.
Not all the way, anyway.
Not all the way. Certainly for some parts of it. And that was a shock, and also presented probably the biggest challenges for the day. And if I'd think of...
The easy parts?
The easier parts were actually how... Not easy, but less challenging than I anticipated it would be to keep going. Because
that's important.
Because I had anticipated, wow, there's going to be some really rough moments where you're just going to be like, this is it. Nah, I'm going to stop here. I don't know. But I think this also speaks quite a lot to the people and the organizers. They were all really friendly, really warm people, really encouraging. And at every aid station, we had aid stations maybe roughly about every 12 kilometers or so. And everyone's like, they're there like, they're your cousin that hasn't seen you in a year, and they're just like, oh, they're happy to see you, and they want you to keep going. They take care of you and look after you, and that was amazing. And it was literally for me to just, these people have, they feel like they're invested in my success. So our success is together. So I can't stop now. Let me just go a little bit further.
A real boost, isn't
yeah.
it? Yeah. The power of that positive support.
100%.
Yeah. So it's a huge distance and a long, long time. No sleep, I'm assuming. Was there any sleep?
Well, again, I can't harp enough on the naivety I had, because I thought, right.
It's only 36 hours, or at least that's the cutoff time anyway.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've stayed up late night before, you know, just load up on caffeine. And that didn't work very well. And
every aid station had a selection of coffees, no, stronger and stronger ones, maybe. No,
I ended up sleeping, almost being forced to, because my body just was not going to go on any further, and ended up taking a nap, a 15-minute nap in a bush. And fortunate for me, at that point, one of my support crew, Mel, was able to accompany me for some of the course, and she could see I was very incoherent and couldn't move in a straight line. And she said, right, hold on, let's take a quick break. And as soon as I sat down, just lights out.
Just curious, did Mel wake you up, or did
yes.
you, she had, it's like you were in the depths of something and you weren't going to come out of it by yourself?
I was somewhere else.
You were somewhere else.
She timed it for 15 minutes, because this was at, I think it was around 2 a.m. and it was going to get quite cold. So she just timed me for 15 minutes and she's like, right, let's keep going.
Yeah, it's a tricky one, isn't it? You obviously want the body to go through at least maybe one sleep cycle. But doing that, you obviously core temperature is going to get dropped significantly, and you know it's probably not. You're talking about a bush, but it's probably going to be quite cool in that bush. Anyway, yeah, okay. So it's not just about sleep; it's about hydration, and it's about eating as well. The three core, if you like, nourishing elements.
Yeah.
So, yeah, what happened with the eating and drinking?
I cannot emphasize enough how much support I got from my support crew, from Mel and Kylie. They essentially outsourced all their thinking for me, and they were able to see me at most of the aid stations. And the the amount of work that they put into making sure everything was planned for every time when they saw me. We had these very intricate spreadsheets and working out micrograms and doses. And so every time I'd see them, they'd give me this and that, refill this and refill that. And they say, right, you've got this, that, your electrolytes, your caffeine, your carbohydrates, your protein. We just need you to finish this and finish that. And by the next time we see you. And all I had to think about was, right, I need to make sure all the stuff is empty by the next time I see them.
Mm-hmm.
And they would...
In 12 Ks or roughly.
Yeah. And they would audit me to make sure that I have actually taken it. Like, right, you are supposed to have finished this. Where's the wrapper? And they'd find it in my pack, because we had to have packs on with all our emergency gear. And they'd find the wrappers in my pack. Like, right, okay, so you did eat everything you're supposed to. Good.
Wow.
Here you go.
They really are taking it all in, aren't they? And doing all of that, you know, that sort of cognitive heavy lifting for you.
Yeah.
Which is a real load off.
It's what I'd imagine Michael Schumacher would have gone through when he as a team effort, and yeah, it was massive.
Absolutely. So there's a cutoff time, we talked about that before, 36 hours. So 165 Ks, 36 hours, that's roughly, make it really simple on me, roughly 5 Ks an hour. And that's a fairly brisk walking pace, but it's not that simple.
No.
So you've got all of your breaks, your stops, your... Did you change shoes or anything like that? You changed shoes. So all of that stuff added on. You've also got your mountain climbing, essentially, which was lots of hills to go up, lots of trees to go under, and so on and so forth. You kind of intimated there a bit before, as far as when Mel found you and, oh, my Lord, you need to sleep. Did you start to wonder if you would make it, or were you always confident?
I think when you set yourself a big, audacious goal, and before towing the line for this event, I almost felt a little bit nervous to say it out loud when people are like, you're doing what? And the moment you say something out loud to someone else, now they become vested in that goal. And I was thinking about that as I was running. There were points in time where I was thinking to myself, I'm not going to make this. I'm way in over my head. And I think it's the fear of failure. And because I've got all these people that know that I'm doing this thing, and if I don't complete this thing, I'm a failure. You know, I was in over my head. They were right, you were crazy, and all these different things. But I went through almost a scenario, because you're out there for a long time and you have a lot of time in your own head, and I went through the scenarios, like, okay, right, so what if you would stop right now and you don't complete and you fail? But life goes on, and there's no penalty. I'm not going to die. Life goes on, and you gave it a shot. And I think there's a lot to be said about even just going after a goal, setting out to achieve something. And I also realized that fear is predicated on future events. And whilst I was afraid of failing and not completing it, I also realized that that's based on a possible outcome in the future, but I can't predict the future. So why am I even worrying about it? And I was like, I'm just going to focus on right now. And right now, I can put one foot in front of the other, and hopefully that will see me through. And I've also got my amazing support crew, and at each station, I was just sort of looking forward to the next time where I get to see them, because there was spelts in time where I think the longest I went was 40 kilometers without seeing them. And so you're just on an island and you're by yourself. And I'm just like, right, I just need to see Mel and Kylie. That's all. It doesn't matter. This hurts and might be having a mental breakdown, but I just need to see Mel and Kylie and everything will be fine.
They will make it well.
Yes.
On that point, were there injuries that you were experiencing? I mean, were there, did you twist something, or did something sort of wear out because of, you know, it wasn't fitting properly? Or because that's a lot of time for toes and all sorts of things that rub and what have you can rub to sort of wear out or get very, very sore.
Yeah, I had a few blisters, which was expected. A slight foot irritation, which it was there, but it wasn't a showstopper. The biggest physical challenge that I had was the thing with all the mountains and hills that you had to climb. You had to go down them.
Ah, yes.
And I was like, fine, you know, it hurts, but it can't get any worse. And then my knees just reached a point where they're like, we're not doing this anymore. We're not playing this game with you anymore.
This is downhill, rather.
This is downhill.
Yeah.
And I ended up with a swollen knee, which I've never had anything like that before. It was very bizarre to me. Mm. That was very bizarre and also quite painful.
Yeah.
That would have been, one knee was swollen, but both knees were, they weren't too happy with me.
I'm sure they weren't. What are you doing to me? So as you're getting closer to the finish line, because obviously you know with each aid station where you are on the course. So as you're getting closer, what was the most challenging thing? You mentioned about, you know, I'm going to see Mel at the next aid station or the next station. So what was the most sort of challenging thing? Was it the knees, as you were saying, or was it something else?
I think the knees ended up not being that, in hindsight, not that big of an issue, because mentally the biggest challenge was definitely mental more than physical. And I told myself I just need to get my body to the point where I can see my support crew before Mel can join me, because we have been friends for a very long time, and she knows me very well. She knows, I often joke, she knows how to push the right buttons to get me going. And I knew that at that point, I could essentially outsource all my strength to her. And lo and behold, that is precisely what happened. And she just keep talking to me, keep me positive, keep my spirits up, and just keep me going. And
so for any listeners that haven't worked it out yet, did you make it?
I did.
Yahoo!
In 32 hours.
32 hours. So with 4 hours to spare, you could have had a decent nap on the way.
I was actually tempted. I'll tell you what, I was actually tempted to stop, because the biggest hill was right at the end. Right at the end. And at this point, I said
there very deliberately.
I was very much tempted to stop and rest for a little while, but Mel said, "No, if we stop now, you might not get up again. We just need to keep going."
Just need to.
And yeah, crossed the line in 32 hours, and
so you see the finish line. Share your thoughts, so you can see it. It may not have been that far away. It might be, you know, just around the corner or something like that, and it's only, you know, less than 100 meters away or something. And then what was it like?
I think it was the epitome of what it means to see a goal through, because as I mentioned before, when you say your goals out loud, you attract the attention of people who have a vested interest in your success.
Yeah.
And as I'm coming down the bend and I can start to see the finish line, Mel starts speeding up and she's getting excited. She's getting excited because, like I said, it was a team effort, and the crowd's getting excited because they want to see me finish. And I get swept up in a wave of euphoria, excitement, and I couldn't explain to you, but my legs just started turning a little bit faster.
And you sprinted like Usain Bolt.
And the faster I ran, the louder everyone got. So I just went faster, and I went faster. And by the time I was coming across the finish line, it felt like I was in a sprint finish, and in a 100-meter race or something like that.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. Reflecting back, was it the experience you expected? Was it something on a bucket list or perhaps something you would do again?
I think for me it was a culmination of a few things, because prior to this I would never have had any interest in doing anything like this. But I'd always been, as an immigrant to New Zealand, I'd always been very much interested in the Maori culture and the customs and the traditions. And I'd always seen Rotorua as a very beautiful place to visit. And it actually coincided with 10 years living in New Zealand for me. And I wanted to do something. I wanted to do something special for that and to immerse myself in a full New Zealand experience. And part of the Tarawera Ultra Marathon is once you complete the 100 miles, you are gifted with a pōnamu.
Which I can see right now.
And I just thought to myself, what an honor it would be to experience this land, these people, and earn a piece of this culture and inherently have that to become a piece of me, myself as an individual. So looking back, it was an amazing experience, and it's 2 weeks now, but I still
feel as though you're running.
Not quite. I feel I still have not found all the words to entirely express and to capture what I experienced and what I felt.
I guess it'll take time to sort of absorb it.
Yeah. Right.
Look, thanks so much for sharing so candidly. It's been such a wonderful and truly inspirational story, a journey. And I don't think it's finished. The race itself has been run, but I think the learnings from that haven't finished yet. So thank you so much, Motokai, for coming in and sharing about your audacious challenge and how you achieved your goal and the growth that you're actually, that growth is a journey that you're still on.
Yes.
As a result of that. So thank you for that, and thank you to our listeners. And you can hear more from Goals and Growth on plainsfm.org.nz. You can listen to the various podcasts of our shows, including the one where Motokai talked about his preparations for it. So we wish you a very pleasant and successful week. Ngā mihi, and bye for now.
Thanks, Pete.